I told you that I was seeing on the way from Minneapolis to St. Paul, whom I knew, who went to college with him, and he happened to be in the same division, I guess, that he was going to be, and Sid knew that he knew me, and he got him drunk, and packed their cousin, and the two of them came out to where I lived in Minneapolis. Mother wasn't home, and I think she was, I don't know what, Florence was there. He said, so there was the guy that she was afraid to about or something like that. So that was that.
Pat got Sid drunk or Sid got packed drunk?
Sid got packed drunk. Of course, Sid was drunk probably half the time. So finally, when I did go down, oh, this is interesting. By that time, I had a job. This is, I guess he was still in Sioux City, I'm not quite sure. And I had a job, and I was supposed to meet Sid down at the St. in Minneapolis. That's the name, the Radisson Hotel, to dinner, to see him. So I went down, and they wasn't there. I waited. Finally, I went to the desk, and I said I was Mrs. Lawrence, and I'd like to go up to his room. And I did, and he was drunk as the Lord on the bed. And I did something I never had done before. Well, and I can't do it yet. But I went through his pocket, and all the pictures he had, not all, two or three or something like that, and loose money around in his pocket. And I took enough to get a cash there and went home. Exciting, okay. I paid for it. Interesting. I can tell these kids plenty. Well, Bob, it's my fault, but nevertheless. So, should that be it for now?
Yeah. Why do you think you did this?
I think I did it because I was not aware. Well, I didn't use my I didn't use my head, certainly. I used my heart. And I have a heart that's very fluttery and it just loves people. As you know, I'm a very loving person.
Did it have anything to do with your parents?
No. No, I didn't. And I don't think it had a thing to do with my parents. And I think that the one thing that I did to help to kill my mother was to do this.
You think, Masri, that you were lonely at the time and wanted to maybe compensate for
I haven't the slightest. I don't know. I don't think that the mother and father's divorce affected me as much as it did Florence. Except this. I think it's paramount and possible for a girl to have a father. And I can remember when I was in college and the girls would have fathers and I used to feel so badly about it because I knew who my father was and I wanted him. And then I remember when I was all alone and I went to USC, as you know, in Los Angeles, and when I met all the people, all my friends and so on, and I never could say anything about my father except that I don't have one. And from that time on, Warner, I guess, I knew that whatever I was, I had to be it by myself. I couldn't stand on anybody's doorstep and say, look who I am. I'm not anybody. Nobody knows who I am. And anyway, who am I? I'm nobody but I make up myself. But at that time, I thought coming to Sioux City and my father, I was a very important person because my father is a great one. And as you know, he's in Who's Who. You know that. And he was a very great man. And it was very impressed me. But believe me, it didn't take me very long to get over that. Not that I didn't still have the same feeling, but it's one that I never emitted. And from there on in, and this is the hardship with women, or girls, particularly at my age, is that I knew I had to be on my own, and I had to make every dollar. I never asked for anything. I don't think I ever borrowed anything from anybody. I'll never know how I got through sometimes. My mother helped me a little. She used to send me some money every month for a while. But I have even my aunt, who had all the money in the world, had plenty. I never asked for one thing in all the time in all of my life. Whatever I have, I've had of my own, or somebody has, because they love me, has given it to me, and want my nice things, the things I have. It's been gifts. But I have never, never borrowed, I have never asked for anything, and I've never received it. I mean, money-wise. And that goes for any man I've ever known to. Ever. I've never received any man money from men. Ever. So.
Okay.
Just turn that off. Yes, I think I should.
Did you do both of them?
Didn't I do both of them?
Yeah, you did. She's got it.
Yeah.
A little red light goes on.
Now, aim it towards you.
Very well. And you want to know what happened?
Or give the chronology of what that is between age, like, 12.
Very well.
Age 35.
Well as I can. First of all, I have to, again, go back to the fact that he was the type of boy who loved other boys as friends. And he had a whole gang at our house, because we were on the corner and had a great big lot in the back, you know, that 2010, and there was always a bunch of boys out there. And eventually they would be getting into a fight, and it would be weird, because he was a little guy. He was not a big chap when he was young. And so he was...
Who's
big in the family? Oh, all of the men were big, except he was just growing up. You're asking when he was about, what, 8 or 9 years? I mean, he didn't grow up that fast, right? His brother was faster. Well, so then he would get into a fight and probably come in bleeding, but never complain. Oh, no.
He probably come in bleeding.
Yeah, a little bit, maybe get or something. And we'd be just starry-eyed. That wouldn't bother him. And he always feeding somebody. He loves his friends, and his friends loved him. And that remained so, as far as I know, up until his death. And I'm going to say why I think that. I met several of his friends when I was visiting in Bethlehem. And one of the two of his friends, who had only met me, wrote me two of the nicest letters I think I had ever had about a person whom they thought so much of. Wasn't that very nice? I don't know whether I have the letters now or not. I saved them. Maybe I do.
Who were they? McFadden?
No.
York
was one.
Except he had died in an airplane accident. He went off with his mistress.
Well, that not after... This was before we died, I guess. York. Well, I'm not sure. I cannot tell you who they were.
And these letters came before Dad died, or after?
No, after he died, they wrote to me as a condolence. So then I think I tried to tell you this. I'm not quite sure when they went away to boarding school, but Weir must have been around 12. That's my guess. And Ross 14. And they went to Blees Military Academy, which you have down there, which is BLEES in Macon, Missouri. And it was in a very elite and expensive place, and that's where the, I think I told you the what were those people, that brewery, the Bush boys went there, Anheuser-Busch, you know that name, don't you? And they had, because we visited my father, and I guess I was born, we visited there at their home in St. Louis, Missouri. And they also have, a place, the Bush Gardens down south in Santa Barbara, in Pasadena. But they were very wealthy, and they were very, very close friends to both Weir and Ross. But now the date on this is interesting, because that would mean that Weir would not have finished high school, grade school.
What day was it?
I don't know what day, but I think it was around, he was about 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess would be that he hadn't, and that Ross had. Now whether they had a place for cadets younger than that, like they did, I told you, come out where I went, and I was only 12, and they had a place for me, but they skipped me. I was so bright.
How far apart were Ross going
there? About 22 or 24 months.
Years.
Yeah, about 2 years apart. So, this is where they went to school, in Blees Military Academy, and it's a very swish place, very attractive. It looked like a ship, you know, with the railings all around and all the activities below.
It still exists?
Oh, no, it's out of It was too selective, I think. There weren't too many students that went there. Well, now that
what
was...
What do you mean by too selective?
Hmm? What do I mean by too selective? Well, I think when you have, at that era, now maybe when the war was coming, it came on, or whatever, I can't answer that, Matthew, but if you have very expensive schools, and if there is a time when we have poverty, as it were, I mean, a depression and so forth, a lot of them probably might not have been able to go there, and so it just was given up. Now, that's, I don't know if that to be true.
You mean when it's too selective, when you only pick wealthy people or certain people, and then there's not enough of us, so
yeah,
people support the schools?
I don't think they went there just because it was a wealthy place, because my father wasn't the kind of one to do that. But it was a very fine military, it was a military academy, you see. It was very, very fine. They had marvelous teachers. So I was told. Now, this is all hearsay. You can look it up sometime. Good question. You can look it up. It might be interesting. So, whatever happened. Now, that would be another 14 hours. So, we then were there when my brother, Ross, was graduated from Police Military Academy, and he must have been, that would be 4 years, he probably was about 17 or 18. Yes.
You mean when you say we were there, you mean the family?
I meant the father and mother, and Florence and I went to the graduation exercise. And I think I told you that father was very, very difficult at the time. He wouldn't be bothered with mother, and so mother and I were together, and Florence and Dad were together. It was a very, very difficult
time. Now, how old were your parents about this time when Roscoe graduated?
My parents? I don't know when she did. I don't remember. I'd have to investigate that, look that up, because, well, I don't know.
The 40s, late 40s?
Well, I would guess, yes, something on that earth, yes.
They were already separated by this time?
Oh, no, they weren't separated at all. They weren't separated until 1917. Yeah, 1917. Father left the house, I think, in around about 1916 to move down to the office. And I think I told you, and this is hard to believe, but it's true, and the day that he was leaving, Mother and Florence and I were up on the third floor, and Father had his study up there, and also that we had a busy room, and I told you that's where the hard girl, I call them hard girls because that's what we did, and there were two of the maid's rooms, if you want to call them, and a trunk room up there. It was a big place. And, I mean, with it. So we were up there, and Father was leaving, and Florence, my sister, was just about, well, she was about to jump out the window. We had a very hard time continuing. She just couldn't stand it. Not that she was so crazy about her father, but she just couldn't stand this idea that we were having turmoil. And she, this gets back to this now, that because she and Mother and I were alone in our house, which was a big house, 12-room house. And so it was pretty sad because my mother was just crushed, and we all were. And then he went down at the office, but I have to get back to Weir. So Weir, well, see, so we were not home with the boys very often, because during the summer, when they did come home from vacation, father had a ranch in North Dakota.
South
Dakota. And he sent, well, Ross went up there, you know, and we were, I don't know where we were, went, and he had them building a house, and he had them doing this and this. So they'd be home intermittently, as it were. I didn't really know too much about their activities or what they were doing.
So they went away for the summer then?
Well, if it was work, not necessarily away, it was someplace, maybe at home, but they were busy, and I was playing with dolls and stuff like that. I mean, I don't remember too much about it, because, you know.
They were
just out. Yeah, they did that. But I didn't see very much of them. And then after that, let's see. Well, yeah, I told you, Ross went to Europe to school, and where did Weir go to? Oh, Weir went to the University of Iowa. Father wanted him to be a doctor, too. But now, in the meantime, Ross had, you see, that was 2 years younger. I didn't mean to give him those 2 years. But he did go to Iowa, and he studied pre-med.
He'd still be in high school at the Police Academy. Philippe
Tobin. Yes, but I...
Did you write his graduation?
No, I didn't. And,
He wanted to be a policeman.
He wanted to be a policeman.
Is it someone with the police academy?
Who was the police commander? No, there's nobody.
You know what you said?
No. Yeah. At the academy. He said he must have still...
He was still at the school.
School, yeah.
Military school.
He may have been, and this I don't remember. I can't answer that.
Well, probably,
but I don't know, but we didn't go. And then after that, let's see, that was when he would have been graduated. And then he went to the University of Iowa, and Ross, as I told you, was in there.
And what was his major?
Pre-med. He was pre-med. Father wanted both of the boys to be, oh yes, that's what I see. And so we went 2 years at the University of Iowa, and he was a beta. And he was a popular guy, and he was, everybody just loved him. He really was. Men liked him so much. He wasn't, women didn't like him as well. They did, but I mean, he wasn't as popular with women as Ross was. He wasn't, Ross was just puffing all the time.
Puffing all the time?
Puffing. Yeah, how do you turn that? You better tell. I just.
Press pause.
So I don't know how. Oh yes, thank you. So we're didn't like pre-med. He didn't want to be a doctor at all, and so he left the university. And I don't know what kind of time he had with dad or not, but he went to.
He
quit school on the strength of it. He only had 2 years of college, I think. And then he decided he was going to be a banker. So he went to, what's the name of that town? I thought I'd remember. And he did very well.
As what?
In the bank. I don't know just what he did.
Oh, he didn't go to school. He just went right into a bank?
Got a job. All right, let's just say he got a job. I don't think it was a big job at the time, but whatever it was, he did very, very well.
So he's about 23, something like that?
Maybe. 22, so yes.
What kind of job do you
know? No, I don't. I don't remember. No, I don't think anything.
Couldn't be a very important job.
No.
No.
However. I can't answer that. And so, now let's see, when he met Ogden. But now then we have to get back at how and then he went to, was it Chicago? He worked in Chicago at the,
He said he drove a cab in New York. Do you know
anything about? No, I never heard him. I didn't even know that. I never ever heard him go. I don't believe that.
You don't?
No.
Because he's mentioned it.
Well, then he did, but I don't know why I would never know it. Or the family. Never.
Maybe he was just teaching.
Maybe, because he loved to do that. Believe me. Well, wait just a minute now. Because he worked in Chicago at this investment company. And I don't know the name of that one. I can't think. It was a very well-known one. And he did very well. And then when Mary came back to Minneapolis, and this is when Mother and I went up there after Father was and Mother were divorced, and I went up to university, Minnesota. And so Weir was working in Minneapolis in this investment company, and it was doing very well. And so this is when we bought the house. Mother was down visiting my Florence Mall Hall in Sioux City, and Weir didn't like where we lived because it wasn't convenient. I don't know whether that was the reason. And he saw or heard about this house, 4045 Bryant Avenue South, which we call Grand Central Station. Everybody's loved that. And he said to me, Tid, that was my nickname, Tid. Come on over, I want to show you this house. And it was just adorable because Miss Jeter had it. She was catty corner from it, so she was a school teacher. And she just really was a rare one. She had her hair, honestly, just rare. She looked like she ought to have had a parrot with her on the side. She wore thick glasses, moved on like that. And she had her hair parted in the middle and down, you know, round like this. And a delight. If ever there was a delightful woman, it was she. And you wouldn't think with this getup she had that she'd have such charm in this little house. It was a cottage. And she had a little cottage curtains. And I think, as I recall, the floor she had painted dark green and she had rugs on. But it was just charming. Well, Weir liked it and so did I like it. And I'm fixed to have a house with just something fine. So I guess he must have asked her, called mother or something, and suggested that she buy it because, not that she had that much money, but do you know how much that house cost? $3,000 in
1919, or on that order. Was anybody carrying accents, or where they might have previously been? Not where, because you wouldn't like, but for anybody carrying what? Their accents, like accents. Oh, accents. Oh, heavens. Oh, no, because we were all, well,
a lot of people think that people from Iowa have an accent, believe it or not. But no, and Weir wasn't in the East long enough to get anything Bostonian or New York. And no, 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 we had no accents and we didn't have, my father was born in Denmark. He spoke many languages, but he did not have any accent, etc. Now then, so we get back to second Cromwell.
What did he do in Denmark?
He was born there. My father was born in Aarhus, Denmark. AARHUS. And you must know about your grandfather because he was a brilliant man, and I think he spoke, I think I've had this down here, 5 or 6 languages, and I've told some stories of it, and after you, after we've gone through this, I can reiterate and or fill in some things. And then his mother and father, when he was only 3 years old, came to, or went to Sioux City, Iowa, and this is where they started their...
So he came
over. Oh, yes, he was just a baby. So, he didn't, but he spoke many, many languages. He was brilliant.
He must have learned
Malayana. Probably. Oh, yeah, of course he did. He went to the university, he's in Who's Who in America for 4 or 5 years. You know, they only keep them for, you know, keep them forever. And I have a copy, make a copy of that sometime. And he went to Russia, and he had any number of honors given him.
Are you turning it off?
Yeah, you get an idea.
What?
You get an idea
of
what it
was like. Then we'll have the rest of it tomorrow.
the second sister Violet. Okay. So, and she loved beautiful clothes, and her mama wanted her to go with the right people. This was indelibly imprinted in Ardrin that the social life was terribly important. And they did have a lovely home, and they did have everything the way most people who, like I like it, like we all did in those days. Nothing slovenly around there. And,
slovenly.
Yeah. No, I mean, they had very nice apartments and did everything beautifully.
Didn't
they have big occasions happening over the
parties and stuff?
Oh, yes. Did you ask if they had a lot of them?
There were a few back then.
Oh, sure. Of course we had parties all the time. And, and we dolled up, though. We didn't dress the way they did. We wear really nice dinner dressing. Oh, yes.
You didn't have movies in these two, so what did you do?
Yes, they did, too, have movies. Oh, we went dancing. We went out to the club to dance. They had them before that, but not as important. Yeah, but they weren't as important. No. And we played cards. We had a lot of bridge and swimming and jumping off to places where maybe six or eight people would rent a cottage, you know, for a couple of weeks. Oh, no, we had their social life. This was nothing.
So you were at 40-45 Bryant,
yeah,
and they were at Fremont.
That's right, that's right. That's right. But, yes, and this is before, and this is when Ardrin was not engaged, so we were in it. And Weir had an interest in another girl, too. Very lovely girl, very lovely. At the time, we all wondered whether it was a good marriage, and I don't think Weir was too crazy about marrying Ardrin at that time. I had a feeling, I mean, after talking about it, not that he didn't care about it, I don't mean that, he did, he cared about it a lot, but I think he had the feeling that the kind of life he was going to be, she was too into that sort of thing, he didn't have it yet or something, I don't know, I have a hunch that that was it. I don't think he felt he could live up to her expectations, but maybe, expectations of the Warners, because the Warners were highfalutin. They were, you know, he had a president of this club and that club and all that sort of stuff, you know? So, there wasn't anything wrong with this idea of not wanting to marry her, and I think he cared a lot about it, but I think he thought that this may not be the thing to do.
What made him
change? Well, I think he got in kind of deep. I think she probably promoted it until it got too, you know, got
so she wasn't being a snob about it. She was interested in him, even though
She was crazy about him. She wanted to marry him, sure. But anyway, this is the last of this. This is when he was in Belfouche. And he engaged her, I guess, then. And he said,
were you supposed to go back there?
No, I don't think I have this right.
Okay.
I don't know. But anyway, I know he was out of town at the time when he was going to give her the ring, and I guess he must have bought it in Belfouche, I don't know. But his taste, according to Ardrin, was not very good. So when the ring arrived, she was in tears, and she came over and showed it to us. Now that's the type of person she was. You know, those things meant so much to her. Well, it probably would have meant a lot to me, too, but anyway, I'll never get over it as long as I did.
And she said why she wanted to marry him. What did she like about
him? She loved him, I suppose.
Why?
Well, he was a lovable guy. Why not? And she thought he was going to go places, and we all did. I mean, he was a bright lad and very well liked. There was no reason why she shouldn't. He's a damn good catch, as a matter of fact, if you want to call it that. So, she's a ring. And it was a Tiffany setting, if you know what that is. It's on prongs, and just the diamond is in the middle. Yeah, but now they're back in style again. But at that time, it should have been more clustered with diamonds on the side and all that sort of stuff. Well, it really struck us funny. I mean, and I think Florence and Mother too. Ardrin was very superficial about some things. Well, so I don't know whether he waited till he got back to Minneapolis or not, but they had the ring changed and or they had it done over to her liking, which is what she should have had in the first place anyway. I guess, especially if they're together. So, I mean, I'm just telling you this as an aside.
He probably just sort of went in the air and
didn't mean anything. A lot of men, those things don't mean anything. He wasn't the kind. Weir was not the type of person who was looking for.
But he also wasn't the type that would ask.
Who?
He'd find out where was he like. He would say, well, this is what's right.
I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know what their relationship is. Huh? And yet I was with them so often and so much.
How long did they go together before?
Well, oh gosh, it must have been a year or more, maybe more. Yeah. Well, be it as it may, finally got married. But I don't think, I don't know about Grace. And she had, of course, a wedding that was huge. You've seen pictures of it. She had, I think, 8 bridesmaids and a bride, and a little girl. This is, I can't even remember that child's name. And the whole works. And another thing.
And what is the whole works?
I'm talking about the bridesmaids and the music, and then the dinner before, which was very, very lovely. They had a beautiful bridal dinner. And, dinner before, the night before. And then in the basement of your grandfather's house, I shouldn't call it basement, amusement room or whatever you want it. They had the tables set up with all the wedding presents, and they had enough wedding presents just to start 2 homes. And a lot of them, she regrettably said, are duplicates, and she'd have to take them back. But that's typical, they say. I don't think that's nothing against her.
What kind of music did she hear?
Oh, how would I know?
Oh, you said that, I thought you meant.
Well, they didn't have any music that night, but when you came, you went to their home after the bridal dinner or before, I can't remember, to look at her presents down in the amusement room. And I don't think there was any music then, and then they had food. Then the wedding, which was very, 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 very beautiful, just beautiful. It was in the church, I think, as I recall. And then, of course, there was a reception, and that was pretty sweet, too.
And that was at Fremont.
Yeah. And that was very elegant. And the girl in Florence was one of the bridesmaids. And, it was a very, very expensive and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful wedding. But Mr. Warner could afford it, I guess, and she wanted it. And Mrs. Warner just loved the idea.
What?
She loved the idea of the wedding because she was that type. I liked her. Please, I'm not saying, we all have qualities that, I think in some ways she was very superficial. And yet she's smart. She's a smart woman. And what is important to one isn't important to the other. And in a sense, I've always liked the same thing. I love beautiful things. But I don't think I'm superficial. I don't know, maybe I am. Okay. So, they were married, and I don't know where they went on the honeymoon. I've forgotten all about it.
Florida?
I don't know. No idea where they went. And I don't know where they lived at first. I don't know anything about that. But then, I can't remember. And then, you see, I think they came back and they bought our house, Mother's house. Because we moved over to Harriet Avenue so that Florence and Tom, who were married then, after that, must have been a year later, I don't know where they were, and they had Connie, and so we all lived together over there on Harriet. Just a foliage of Harriet.
Tom and Florence and you and your mother.
And Connie. Mm-hmm. And then, we were there, that's when I went to, I worked in the public library, children's library, and I did one of the great parties. And then I couldn't go any further in my getting any money with it unless I had my degree. I had my college degree, but I didn't have my library degree. And you have to be a librarian in order to get any further. So that's when I decided to go to California. And Mother said if I would go to the University of Southern California, she would come with me. I had planned to go to Pratt, New York, but she wouldn't go there. I wasn't planning. I don't know where I was going to get this money. I said, Weir helped me through school. He helped me a lot. And he was the one who encouraged me, too, to do this. He said, don't settle for anything less than the degree so that you can get something. Yeah, I remember this very distinctly. Well, but I might add that I did that because, as I told you, I have never owed anybody anything. Oh, and I, well, so I went to the university and of Southern California and got my degree. And then I, from there, I went to the Bank of Italy, became an assistant librarian then, and then came to California up here because this was during the Depression, and they were going to cut out the library there but move one up here. And this is when I came up here, and I didn't go in there. I stayed with my aunt who lived in this building up here, lived here. I stayed with her for a short while, and then I got a job out at the University of California in the medical department. So I was in the medicine. Well, let's not talk about me. I'm going to smart thing. Where you want me or where? Oh, well. So then after I did the medical library there, I didn't get any money. I think I only had $50 a month. That's how much I got paid, I believe. But I learned a lot. And I lived. My aunt, of course, didn't want me to live with her anymore and her husband. I mean, she had a bigger place than this, but you don't want people around. So she had a very, very nice friend who lived out near the university, who had a big home, and she was just delighted to have me be there, because I paid for it. And all I got, I used to say I should stay home and save the car fare. but I met a lot of interesting people and doctors, and I had a very social time, and a very lovely time. And so then one of the doctors said, this is an interesting part, the doctor that gave me the job was named, and you should remember this maybe, Dr. Chauncey Leake. He was a very, very great Leake, L-E-A-K-E. He was a, I'll hold it. He was the head of a, well, not only the library, but the rest. Oh, this is so much to tell you about him. I learned so much from him, and he liked me. And this is art. I was now into the art business because he would say to me, B, I want you to come out at the museums, and I'll explain something to you. And so we'd see all these old paintings with, for instance, Leonardo da Vinci, but I mean prior to that. Who was it that did the Cretans, you know, or painted the Cretans in them? Spain, Portugal, you know, the big bellies, huh? No, he was a skinny guy. Well, I eventually I can remember some of this, but we saw the babe that had the big belly, you know, from the painting. You notice this sometimes. This is old art. And that, he was a Cretan, some of them. And then he was not the Cretan. The one with the big bellies, the one that had the... we should have worked all this, thought all this out. Another disease that is so prevalent, it was then. But the ones that I'm telling about were Cretans, and their heads were the bodies were smaller than their heads. Let me go into this another time, because I want to remember, because I think you might be interested. And so he pointed so many of these things out to me in studying art, how you could tell the ailments, and of course this is what the doctors did at that time. They didn't have a lot of knowledge, and they didn't, well, they did chop people up too, but they could tell a lot. Yes, but they could tell a lot about a patient's illnesses from the paintings, these great, great paintings that were done. Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. But nobody thinks about that, and you know, it's kind of interesting. Well, Dr. Leake, when I asked him for a job, this was just that I wanted to be a librarian at the University of California, medical librarian. I'd never had any medical training. And he said, "Now sit down and have a cigarette." Oh, he was a doll. And I started, he talked softly, and oh, he had so much charisma, and so he was just charming. So finally he said, "Well, where did you come from?" And I told him. He said, "Well, I know all about your father," and he hauled out a book. He said he did the first operation of, I had the operation myself. You think I'd remember?
Thyroid.
Not thyroid. Your stomach. No.
Hello?
Yeah. Oh, I'll think of that. I don't know. It's a